It started with a question, a single, innocuous question that I was never supposed to ask. I remember the moment clearly. I was standing in the quiet vaults of the data library on Forge World Vestiges Delta, deep in the hum of cogitators and the incense of machine oil. I was a dutiful tech priest of the Adeptus Mechanicus, a guardian of knowledge and servant of the Omnisire. In those days, my life was governed by sacred routines and binary prayers. Every morning, I would intone the Litany of Ignition to coax awake the ancient machinery under my care. Every night, I would give thanks to the Machine God for the day's discoveries, however minor. I truly believed in the sanctity of knowledge and the necessity of keeping it on a tight, righteous leash. But that day, something changed. I found a fragment of data in the archives that defied categorization. It was a scrap of code buried in the noospheric stacks where only authorized adepts tread. It should not have been there. An anomaly, an error. It was just a line of seed in an old research log, a flicker on a screen. I should have reported it immediately to my superior. I should have purged it from the system and cleansed the machine with sacred unguents for good measure. That's what the protocol demanded. That's what loyalty demanded. Instead, I hesitated. The fragment glowed on the terminal, its logic obscure yet elegant. It looked like part of something, a piece of a much larger design, and it held a question embedded in the code in a half-deciphered form. I remember the words forming in lingua technis across my retina display. What is the true name of the machine god? My heart, the one organ I still had that was mostly flesh, skipped a beat. A trickle of unease and excitement ran through me. The true name of the machine god? We all know the catechisms. The Omnisire is the Emperor. The Emperor is the Omnisire. To question that is tech's heresy of the highest order. And yet, here was a question I had never seen, hidden in code where only a curious mind could find it. I glanced around the data vault. The only witnesses were silent servers stacked like tombstones, and a servitor mindlessly scrubbing dust in the corner. The air was still, heavy with the weight of ancient knowledge. No one would know if I indulged my curiosity for just a moment, right? That moment of hesitation was the first step. I made a choice. With a quick murmur of binary to placate the machine spirit for what I was about to do, I saved the fragment to my personal cogitator. Just a little peek, I told myself. A diagnostic of the anomaly, nothing more. After all, was it not my duty to safeguard knowledge? How could I guard against a threat I didn't understand? Yes, that was the logic I clung to. Back in my private quarters, a dim cell cluttered with servo tools and data slates, I isolated the fragment on an offline cogitator unit. I chanted a half-hearted prayer to the Omnisire. My voice wavered, guilt already tugging at me, and ran a decryption subroutine. The screen flickered, lines of green code pouring in rivers of logic. At first, it was nonsense, a babble of equations and scrap code. I frowned, adjusting the decoding rights. There, a pattern emerged. Within the tangle of code lay embedded commands and riddles. I caught glimpses of text in high Gothic and binaric cant, overlapping. The truth lies in the shadow of knowledge. Omnisire, mask, the architect of fate. Seek the clockwork archivist beneath the alabaster spire. My augmetic eye whirred as I scrolled through the data. This was old, older than the current archive indexing allowed. Someone had hidden this, deeply. It appeared to be a long-forgotten Magos' research notes, concealed perhaps because they verged on tech heresy. The reference to Architect of Fate unsettled me. I had heard that title only in fragmentary whispers, usually in the context of proscribed lore. There was a name, too, mentioned only once. Tzinch, I mouthed it silently, unsure how to even pronounce it. A chill traced the base of my skull where metal interface met organic spine. I knew of the Dark Gods only by the prohibition of their study. To even acknowledge them beyond cautionary folktales was dangerous. But in that moment, sitting alone in the blue glow of the cogitator screen, I felt something kindling in my chest, a mix of fear and tantalizing allure. Here was knowledge very few in the Imperium ever glimpsed, forbidden knowledge. I should have smashed the cogitator to pieces right then. I almost did. My hand hovered over the emergency purge rune, my flesh hand trembling. But I stopped because I saw coordinates in the code. A location tag embedded in the script, likely where further data was stored. Alabaster Spire. I recognized the name. It was an abandoned facility on the Forge World's northern pole, a place long sealed off after some accident centuries ago. Officially, it was a failed atmospheric processor tower now left to rust. Unofficially, well, no one talked about it. Every Forge world has its ghosts. Curiosity tightened its grip on me. The promise of answers, of the true name, and whatever secrets this architect of fate held dangled before me like a scrap of ancient circuitry just out of reach. I told myself I needed to investigate only to secure any dangerous tech that might be hidden there. A perfectly dutiful motive, yes? Report it, after claim I stumbled on it while running maintenance checks. Plausible deniability. I even drafted a report in my head to justify the excursion. But deep down, an inner voice, my own, yet somehow not entirely mine, snickered at the flimsy pretext. I wasn't fooling anyone, not even myself. I wanted to know. I needed to know. So I donned my red robes, gathered my tools, and set out under the guise of a routine solo patrol. As I left, I noticed my heart was pounding. Whether from fear or anticipation, I could not tell. The alabaster spire loomed ahead in the dusk, a needle of pale metal piercing a bruised purple sky. Once it might have gleamed, but now its surface was tarnished and pitted. A lonely monument to a forgotten project. My boots crunched on frost-laced ground as I approached the sealed gate. Officially condemned, locked by decree of the Fabricator Locum. But I was Mechanicus. Locks yield to those who know the machine. My mechadendrite extended from beneath my robes, the multi-tool at its tip, interfacing with the ancient console. I murmured a calming binaric hymn, simultaneously running a brute force cipher. After a tense minute, the rune for access granted flickered green. With a groan, the gate slid open, releasing a breath of stagnant air from within. Inside was darkness and silence. I activated the lumen on my shoulder. The beam cut through swirling dust, illuminating corridors of austere metal panels. The place smelled of rust, mold, and something acrid that stung my enhanced nostrils. Cautiously, I stepped inside, the sound of my robes brushing the floor unnaturally loud. Every so often, a failing glow globe on the ceiling sparked to life, only to fizzle out. Shadows danced and evaporated. The silence was eerie. I half expected a horde of scuttling metal spiders or rogue servitors to ambush me. But nothing came, only the faint hum of dormant machines. Following a schematic from the data fragment, I navigated a maze of hallways. The coordinates pointed to a specific chamber deep in the complex. On the way, I passed things that gave me pause. A long-abandoned workshop with half-built automata strewn on workbenches, their design unlike any sanctioned STC pattern. Strange, sinuous shapes, more organic than machine. In another room, the walls were etched with intricate patterns. Not typical Mechanicus circuit script, but swirling motifs that almost looked like stylized eyes and feathers. My augmetic lens zoomed in on one carving, and I realized it was inlaid with cobalt blue copper, an odd aesthetic flourish for a utilitarian facility. I muttered a litany against corruption under my breath, feeling a pang of unease. Was it my imagination, or did the carved eyes follow my movement? At last, I reached what had once been a data library at the spire's peak. The door was ajar, its mag seals long disabled. I slipped in, and my breath caught. The circular chamber's walls were lined with shelved data banks and dusty scroll cases. Many were smashed or overturned. In the center, beneath a cracked dome skylight, stood a tall cogitator lectern, an ancient model, its screen flickering weakly with ghostly light. Slumped over it was a skeleton in red robes. I froze. The skeletal remains of a tech priest still clutched the lectern's edges with bony hands. It was a bizarre tableau, as if he died desperately trying to read something. A wreath of fine ash or mold outlined the corpse, as though there had once been more to him that had since disintegrated. The air here felt thinner, tinged with ozone and burnt hair. I edged closer, fighting the urge to flee. My rational mind took over, likely an old Margos who died when this spire was abandoned. Nothing supernatural. Sure, nothing weird about a dead tech priest in a forbidden ruin full of creepy art. Perfectly normal. With a shaky sigh that might have been a nervous laugh if I let it, I carefully moved the skeleton aside. The bones were brittle and collapsed into a heap with a dry clatter, a cloud of dust rising. I tried not to gag. The smell of decay and time invaded even my filters. On the lectern screen scrolled lines of code, similar gibberish to what I'd found in the vault, but far more of it. The source of the fragment, perhaps. I touched the activation rune. The machine spirit in this old cogitator was weak, faltering. The display barely had power. I needed to download the data quickly. Extracting a data worm from my belt, I plugged it into the lectern. The transfer rune blinked as I initiated the download. Information began to pour in, volumes of it. Snatches flashed by faster than I could read, diagrams of human anatomy with mechanica annotations, astrological charts interwoven with circuit diagrams, diary entries in log form, arcane symbols, and recurring over and over that same word, Zinch. The hair on my augmetic audio pickups, were it possible for them to prickle, they would have, felt like they pricked. I had the distinct sensation of being watched. My eyes flicked over the dark corners of the room. Nothing, just that uneasy feeling. Suddenly, the lectern screen flared, and a distorted voice emitted from its vox grille. A garbled scrap of a recording, maybe.
Forgive me, error. I sought the truth. Static. Architect of fate. Guide me.
I jumped at the sound, nearly yanking the cable out. The voice was half-human, half-machine in its distortion, and indescribably weary. It must have been the final log of the Magos who died here, his last words echoing out of the gloom. I swallowed hard, unsure whether I felt pity or dread. Guide me, the dead man had said. Guide me, a plea to something called the Architect of Fate to Zinch. Had he died receiving an answer, or because he didn't get one? Either possibility was as frightening as the other. The data worm pinged completion. I quickly retrieved it, stowing the device containing the trove of forbidden lore inside my robes. Mission accomplished, I told myself, trying to inject some bravado into my thoughts. I had what I came for. Time to go. As I turned to leave, my lumen caught something on the floor by the skeleton's remains. A small metal icon glinted amid the dust. I knelt and picked it up. It was a pendant on a chain. The symbol was unfamiliar, a twisting shape, almost like a coiled flame or a many-pointed star, stylized in brass. Instinct told me this was important. Maybe an encoded key or just a heretical memento. I slipped it into a pocket. That's when I heard it. A faint scratching sound like metal on metal, somewhere in the hall outside the library chamber. My body went rigid. The sound stopped. I held my breath and listened. Nothing now, just the thump of my twin hearts in my ears. Twin hearts, right, I had a secondary cyber heart implant. Yet in that moment, both hearts hammered like drums. I had seen enough horror vids in my time to take no chances. Clutching my staff, I quietly backed out of the room and retraced my steps. Every shadow seemed alive now. The carved eyes on the walls almost certainly were watching this time. I could feel their gaze prickle across my skin. The scratching noise did not return, but the silence was oppressive, pregnant with threat. I didn't relax until I was out of the spire and the gate was sealed shut behind me. Only when the cold outside air filled my lungs did I realize I had been holding a breath for far too long. On the trudge back to the main complex, I kept glancing over my shoulder, half expecting to see a silhouette following. There was none, only the distant lights of the forge and the looming cranes and smelter stacks breaking the horizon. By the time I reached my hab and secured the door, I felt a surge of triumph beneath my nerves. I had done it. I had delved into the unknown and retrieved something truly extraordinary. Part of me was exhilarated. Another part was horrified at my own boldness. I should report this now, I thought. March up to the fabricator's office and lay out what I found, beg forgiveness for the trespass. Yes, I should have done that. Instead, I took the data worm and the strange pendant, set them on my workbench, and sat there for a long moment in the dark, hearts still pounding. I had crossed the threshold. The second step was complete. I plunged into the data like a starving man at a feast. Night after night, in the solitude of my quarters, I sifted through the trove from the spire. It was a jumble of research notes, personal journal entries, schematics, and occult treatises. Much was incomprehensible at first, references to ancient Terran myth mixed with esoteric formulas. But patterns emerged. I began to piece together the late Magos's story. His name was Magos Erkart, and he had been a seeker of truth beyond the sanctioned. In his logs, Erkart wrote of the machine god's true nature, came to suspect that the Omnissiah was a lie, told to placate the masses. He believed some greater cosmic force of knowledge and change was behind the spark of invention and the warp-tinged miracles of technology. That force he identified as Tzinch, the architect of fate. As I translated his ciphered notes, I could almost feel Urquhart's obsession bleeding through the text. He spoke of visions granted to him after performing forbidden calculations, of a whispering voice in the static, of dreams he called the Clockwork Labyrinth, whatever that was. He grew convinced that by certain rituals, an unholy fusion of tech ritual and witchcraft, he could speak directly to this great conspirator and gain the ultimate knowledge. My rational mind balked. Witchcraft? The warp? These were anathema to a man of the Mechanicus. And yet, reading his words, I felt a strange kinship. Urquhart hungered for understanding just as I did. He was perhaps more desperate or more daring, and it killed him. There were gaps in the logs, but in the end he described attempting a summoning. The final entry cut off, but I hardly needed it spelled out. I had seen his corpse. That should have been a stark warning. But by the time I reached that part of the text, I was already too deep. The forbidden lore had sunk its claws into me. In the following days, I went through the motions of my normal duties like a sleepwalker. I tuned out the familiar prayers, half-muttered the catechisms, and all the while my mind churned on what I'd read. During a routine engine calibration, I caught myself reciting not the litany of calibration, but a line from Urquhart's notes, a string of syllables that tasted strange on my tongue, a scrap of some incantation, perhaps. My fellow adepts didn't seem to notice, but one did give me an odd glance. That adept, Linza, a junior engine seer I'd worked with for years, cornered me later in the cogitator bay. She asked if I was feeling well. She'd noticed I looked pale and overclocked, trying to inject a little tech humor. I realized I hadn't been maintaining my augmetics properly. A nervous tick had developed in my mechadendrite, causing it to tap on the floor irritably without my bidding. I forced a chuckle and made some excuse about a poorly calibrated cranial implant disrupting my sleep cycles. Linza nodded, but concern lingered in her organic eye. The other was a bronze implant that could detect thermal fluctuations. In that moment, I feared it might sense the warmth of shame on my cheeks. After that, I became more careful. I took to locking my quarters at odd hours, claiming a need for intense meditations on the canticles of the Omnisire. In truth, I was devouring Urquhart's findings and cross-referencing them with whatever scraps of lore I could secretly pull from the Mechanicus datanet. A dangerous game, as each forbidden query risked flagging the attention of the priesthood or, throne forbid, the Inquisition. Bit by bit, I started to experiment. Small steps at first, I repeated the peculiar syllables I'd learned, intoning them in front of inactive devices to see if anything happened. Once, a dormant servo skull suddenly sparked to life and hovered, glaring at me with pinprick red eye lenses. It crashed to the ground a moment later, lifeless again. That minor success thrilled and unsettled me. It wasn't a standard activation, right? More like I had agitated the machine spirit, or something inside the machine. I couldn't replicate it consistently, but it was enough to prove Urquhart's methods had some effect. Every success, however small, fed my daring. I decided to attempt one of the simpler rituals outlined in the notes. According to Urquhart, it was meant to open a window, presumably a minor communion with the warp, with Tzintch's realm. It required some unusual components: ground crystal from a logic engine, a drop of blood, my own would do, and a pattern drawn in ink made from Losut. Gathering these in secret was an adventure in itself, but I managed. Late one cycle, well past the hours when the hab block was active, I cleared my chamber floor. By lantern light, I painted the pattern as described, interlocking loops and spiky sigils forming a sort of nine-pointed design that made me dizzy to look at. I placed a shard of a broken cogitator screen at the center, the window, and smeared a drop of my blood on it, heart hammering all the while. With a deep breath, I began chanting the invocation transcribed from Urquhart's journal. The air in the room grew heavy and warm. The hairs on my organic arm stood on end as static built up. My Vox implants caught a faint whining sound far away, growing louder. I kept chanting, voice low and fervent. The words felt bizarre, half machine code, half sorcerer's cant. My tongue stumbled over a particularly alien phrase, something in a language not meant for human throats. But I pushed through. Suddenly, the shard at the center of the circle began to glow. A soft, eerie luminescence, deep blue tinged with gold, flickered across its surface. My breath hitched. Was this actually working? The whining sound modulated into a whispering chorus. I couldn't discern the words. It was as if a dozen voices were speaking just beyond the edge of hearing, hissing secrets. The shard's surface shimmered, and for a moment I swore I saw an eye looking back at me from within the glass. Not my reflection, something else, alive and hateful and knowing. Fear seized me. I jolted back, reflexively uttering the Mechanicus's scramble hex, a sort of verbal abort code. It wasn't part of the ritual, just a panicked reflex. The effect was immediate. The glow vanished, the whispers cut off, and the shard cracked down the middle with a sharp snap. Silence rushed back. I was left trembling, drenched in cold sweat. My head throbbed and my vision swam. I blinked and saw that, to my horror, thin tendrils of smoke were rising from the parchments on my desk. Urquhart's notes. A fallen lantern had toppled my clumsy retreat, no doubt, and ignited them. Cursing, I smothered the small fire quickly, heart in my throat. A quarter of Urquhart's journal was now black ash. A loss, but not a critical one. Most of it I had already memorized or backed up in encrypted cogitator files. Still, it felt like an ill omen. As I swept the ashes aside, I noticed a peculiar shape amid the charred scraps, a pattern of burn marks on my metal desk, almost like a laughing face. I shook my head, blinking, and the soot smear was just random char. Imagination playing tricks, surely. That night, I barely slept. My dreams, when they came, were vivid and chaotic. I saw writhing coils of circuitry turning into living snakes, an ocean of knowledge in which I was drowning. Above it all, a great raven, its eyes blazing like binary suns, watching me. I woke in a panic more than once, the image of that burning gaze still behind my eyelids. In the following days, subtle changes plagued me. I had constant headaches that no amount of electropurging could fix. My temper grew short. I snapped at colleagues over trivial things. Poor Linza, confused by my irritability, timidly suggested I take a maintenance break. I told her to mind her own diagnostics, far harsher than she deserved. On two occasions, I caught myself whispering to no one, muttering fragments of the ritual under my breath, as if in conversation with an unseen companion. Worse, I began noticing physical changes. At first it was minor, a rash of odd, blue-tinged, circuitry-like patterns on the flesh of my left forearm. I quickly covered it with a long glove. Then one morning I woke to find a small lump behind my right ear, hard and unnaturally warm. It didn't feel like a cyst or an implant malfunction. When I touched it, I swore I heard faintly that same chorus of whispers from the ritual. Needless to say, I stopped prodding it. I was alarmed, yes, but part of me also felt a perverse pride. These anomalies, they were proof that I had touched something beyond the ordinary. Scars of initiation, perhaps. The logical part of my mind screamed to seek a Medicae purity scan, but I already knew what any tech priest would say and do if they discovered warp taint on me. My life would be over in short order, one way or another. So I soldiered on, doubling down on secrecy. I told myself the discomfort was temporary, that once I pushed a little further, I would gain control, and then I'd be able to rid myself of any nasty side effects. Knowledge is power. Guard it well. So goes the Mechanicus saying. I had the knowledge. I just needed the power to wield it safely. And to get that, I needed to go deeper still. By then, I had taken the third and fourth steps, though I was too engrossed to count them. Plans began to take shape in my mind, wild, audacious plans that I would have never contemplated before. It wasn't enough to tinker in secret. Why, I thought, should I cower in the shadows with this newfound enlightenment? The Mechanicus preached stagnation, rote repetition of millennia-old truths. But I had seen beyond the curtain. Cintich offered evolution, transformation, change in a galaxy paralyzed by dogma. It started innocently, or not so innocently, with minor sabotages, a recalibration here, an accidental code purge there. I slipped snippets of Urquhart's scrap code into the Forge's data network to see how the machine spirits would react. The results were satisfying. Minor machine malfunctions at first, a crane arm moving erratically, an assembly line halting without cause. The tech priests were baffled, poring over schematics and maintenance logs. I feigned concern and helped them fix the issues, all the while noting how the corrupted code subtly spread, like a seed of chaos, germinating. Encouraged, I prepared for a grander move. I realized that to truly embrace what I'd become, I would need to sever ties with my old life. Vestiges, Delta, and the Adeptus Mechanicus had been my cradle, but now it was more like a cage. Cinch's whispers, for by now I recognized that inner voice as his influence, urged me to break it open, to fly free. But first I wanted answers, direct ones. Urquhart had failed to summon the architect's emissary. I would attempt what he could not, with better preparation, of course. Under the pretense of conducting an important maintenance operation, I requisitioned a sanctum deep below the main forge, a chamber warded against AuSpec's scans. It was originally used for delicate plasma reactor calibrations, isolated from electromagnetic interference. It was perfect for my ritual, and safer than returning to the spire, which by now might have drawn attention after I tampered with its seal. This time, I painstakingly assembled everything needed, runic circuits etched into the floor in copper wire, forming interlocking nine-pointed stars, capacitors modified to channel warp energy, and that brass pendant I found. I suspected it was a focus or key. I hung it above the center of the ritual space. I even brought a convenient sacrifice, a low-level maintenance servitor whose mind was long gone and body mostly machine. I had subtly reprogrammed it to follow me down and then power off. No one would miss a lobotomized servitor. A convenient rationalization. Truth was, I chose it because I balked at sacrificing a true human. I wasn't that far gone. Not yet. Before commencing, I did something that, in hindsight, was quite unhinged. I removed the electude emblem of the Mechanicus from my right bionic arm, that cogwheel skull symbol of the cult Mechanicus. I sliced it off the synth skin with a heated blade. The flesh sizzled. It hurt like hell. I bit down on a rag to keep from screaming. Once done, I cauterized the wound and then etched in its place, using the servitor's precision laser, a crude copy of the symbol from the pendant, the sigil of Tzinch, the changer of ways. The pain was intense, but I wore it like a badge, a holy icon in my mind, marking my new allegiance. When all was ready, I began the summoning. If the earlier minor ritual was like dipping a toe in warp-tainted waters, this was diving in, head first. I recited invocations drawn from Urquhart's work and new lines that seemed to write themselves into my mind as I spoke them. The air thickened, taking on an electric charge that made my augmetic hair stand on end. The pendant at the center of the circle began to sway, though there was no breeze, casting a wriggling shadow. The servitor lay inert at the edge of the pattern. At the crescendo of the chant, I took a ritual dagger and sliced a deep line across the servitor's pallid torso where metal met flesh. Black blood oozed forth, dribbling onto the copper sigils. I half expected the servitor to scream, but its cortical implants kept it oblivious. A mercy. The blood sizzled on the copper wiring, and the entire pattern on the floor flared bright blue, then golden white. I stepped back, momentarily blinded by the intensity. A sound like tearing metal filled the chamber. In the heart of the glowing design, reality parted. It's the only way I can describe it, a rip in the air, spilling prismatic light. The pendant melted away in the heat, its purpose served, and from the tear, something emerged. It was not the full, hulking form of a demon, as depicted in forbidden texts. Not some horned monstrosity stepping bodily into our world. It was more like a projection, a swirling silhouette of fire and shadow. Vaguely avian, vaguely human, constantly shifting. Eyes. Too many eyes blinked in and out of existence within that vortex of form. I wanted to prostrate myself, but terror glued me to the spot. I could feel it looking at me, into me. The weight of its gaze was physically paralyzing.
Speak, Seeker.
A voice resonated, though the entity had no mouth I could see. It spoke directly in my mind, each word a kaleidoscope of tones, male, female, coarse, refined, all at once. My throat felt like it was full of glass shards. I managed to stammer, I seek knowledge, truth. It laughed a crackling sound like a voltage arc mixed with a crow's caw.
You have sacrificed much for a taste. Will you sacrifice more for the feast?
In that moment, any remaining illusion that I was in control shattered. I realized this being, a herald of Tsinch, perhaps, was toying with me, testing. Yes, I whispered, then louder. Yes, whatever it takes. I want to see what Urquhart could not. I want power, understanding. I want to change. The last word hung in the air. The swirling form pulsed. I thought I saw a limb, a hand, a talon, extend outward.
Then be reborn, pupil of the Changer.
It lunged at me faster than thought. I felt searing pain as spectral claws plunged into my chest. I screamed, an awful raw sound torn from my lungs. My vision went white. I thought it was killing me. That I'd be found here charred like Urquhart. But as the agony peaked, it ebbed just as abruptly. I gasped, collapsing to my knees. The entity was gone. The only evidence of its presence was the smoking copper sigils on the floor, and the servitor's corpse, now warped into a grotesque shape, as if its machinery and flesh had been braided together by insane artifice. I was alive, and more than alive. I felt charged, my nerves sang, my mind raced. I got unsteadily to my feet, adrenaline surging. On the floor, where the servitor's blood had pooled, the copper lines had fused into a solid metal emblem, the same symbol I'd carved on my arm. I realized with a shudder of joy that the symbol was now also etched into the flesh of my chest, right above my augmented heart, as if burned there. A mark of Tsinch. I had done it. I had communed with the warp and survived, more than survived. I was changed. I could feel new awareness flooding me, like a cogitator suddenly given access to a far larger data store. Bits of knowledge, arcane and technical, danced at the edges of my thoughts. The sensation was intoxicating. Any elation was short-lived, however. A klaxon started blaring in the distance, emergency alarms. In my absorption, I hadn't considered that the ritual would trip some sensor grid. Apparently, I hadn't been as isolated as I thought. The disturbance had been detected. I needed to move quickly. I gathered up my personal journal. Yes, by then I had started keeping my own secret log, documenting my journey as Urquhart did, and a few devices. There was no time to erase the ritual evidence. Let them find the melted pendant, the blood, the burnt patterns. It wouldn't matter. I knew I wouldn't be coming back here. As I rushed into the corridor, I nearly collided with someone, Engenseer Linza. She had followed me after all, worried and determined. She must have overridden some security protocols when the alarms went off. Her eyes widened at the sight of me. I can only imagine what I looked like. Wild-eyed, chest and arm bloodied with still smoldering marks, perhaps even the faint glow of warp energy dancing in my irises. And behind me, the unholy light still fading in the chamber.
What have you done?
She cried, voice breaking with panic and anguish. For one frozen second, guilt and love. Yes, I realize now I loved her in my own twisted way. Warred with the roaring exultation inside me. I opened my mouth to plead, to explain, to maybe even beg her to come with me. You'll see, it's all true. We can escape this lie together, I wanted to say. But behind Linsa, down the hall, shapes were rushing. Skitarii guards responding to the alarm. In seconds, they would be upon us. My survival instinct, twisted by Tsinchi's gift, reacted. Without thinking, I raised my hand, the one with the freshly burned symbol, and spat a word of power that leapt unbidden to my lips. Blue flame erupted from my palm, a cone of warp fire that engulfed Linsa at point-blank range. Her eyes went wide, and for a moment, I saw heartbreak in them more than pain. She toppled backward, the ghostly flames consuming her torso. These were not ordinary flames. They were transmutative, turning flesh to flickering crystal and metal to bubbling slag. She was dead before she hit the ground, a shocked half-scream etched on her face, the other half already a charred ruin. I had just killed my closest friend. My only friend, really. And I did it as naturally as drawing breath. There was no time for remorse. The Skitarii unit rounded the corner just as Linza's body collapsed. They saw me. Heretic tech priest wreathed in witch fire and raised their weapons in confusion and horror. I remember the red glow of targeting lasers dancing across the smoke. One of them barked,
"Alt! Drop to your knees!"
Even as his voice shook at the blasphemous sight, I replied by hurling a ball of that same warp fire down the corridor. It burst against the walls, exploding into a spray of multicolored flames that made the soldiers dive for cover. Using the distraction, I ran, no, sprinted, in the opposite direction. My augmetic legs, perhaps enhanced by whatever boon I'd received, carried me faster than any baseline human. I dashed through maintenance tunnels, bypassing bulkheads I had pre-unlocked in preparation. Alarms rang everywhere now. The whole forge was rousing to a crisis. Over the Vox speakers, I heard panicked reports. Security breach in Section 17.
Heretic contamination alert.
They knew something was terribly wrong, even if they didn't yet understand what. Reaching an exterior access hatch, I found one of my earlier sabotages had paid off. An entire section of the perimeter fence was experiencing a systems blackout, thanks to my scrap code. I slipped through that blind spot just as the internal AuSpex grid hummed back to life. I felt it sweep like a tingle on my newly marked skin. Under cover of darkness, I fled into the wasteland dunes beyond the forge complex. Behind me, I could see the orange glow of fires. My stray warp flame had spread somewhere, and sirens wailed into the night. Perhaps it would burn itself out quickly, or perhaps it would consume half the manufacturum. Either outcome was fine by me. It was chaos, and chaos meant change. I clutched my journal to my chest as I trudged into the cold desert, adrenaline finally ebbing and an avalanche of emotion taking its place. Exultation warred with grief. I was free. Cast out. But free. And I was utterly alone. The 5th, 6th, and 7th steps irrevocably taken in one tragic burst. It's been some years since that night. How many, I'm not even certain. Time flows strangely once you slip the chains of Imperial Order. I have wandered far, bartering my talents to smugglers, cults, even the occasional Chaos Space Marine warband in need of a tech savant. In the lawless fringes of the galaxy, I have found my kin, the disciples of the Changer, hidden in shadows. Some are like me, former scholars and adepts, seduced by the quest for knowledge. Others were outcasts for different reasons, drawn to Tsinchi through their lust for power or revenge. We recognize each other by the gleam of knowing in our eyes, or eye or eyes, depending on the mutations. Sometimes I try to count the stages of my fall. By my reckoning, the 8th step was leaving my old world behind, and the 9th was accepting that this path of change never truly ends. There is always another secret, another transformation ahead, an infinite road of twists. Do I regret it? The question seems absurd. Regret is for those who believe in mistakes. I choose to see my journey as transformation, evolution. Regrets are just attachments to the past, and I have sloughed off my past like a molting serpent. Though in the quiet moments, I do recall Linza's face in that last instant. That memory still haunts me when my thoughts drift. Maybe that's why I keep moving, never staying long in one place. I tell myself it's for secrecy, but maybe I'm just trying to outrun a ghost. If so, Tsinch hasn't seen fit to take that memory from me. Perhaps it's a final test or simply a reminder of the price of my rebirth. I set out seeking the true name of the machine god. I never found a neat, simple answer. Instead, I found the illusion behind it all. The Omnisire, the Emperor, the Machine God. Mere masks and titles on the shifting face of the warp. The truth is that there may be no singular Machine God waiting to bless the worthy. Or if there is, it's not what we thought. The universe is not a great machine ticking along to the same pattern forever. It's a living, writhing thing. Full of chaos and possibility. Tsinch is that possibility, that chaos given thought and form. In a way, I suppose I did find my answer after all. The machine god I once worshipped was just a facet of the changer of ways all along, or at least that's what I choose to believe now. They call me heretic, warpsmith, tech sorcerer labels to simplify what I have become. The Imperium fears what it cannot categorize. Let them fear me. I have seen wonders they'll never know. I have turned metal to flesh and flesh to metal with a whispered equation. I have watched a man's fate unravel in my palm like a skein of fiber optic thread. I've danced on the edges of madness and found it quite enlightening. This is how it happens. How he gets you. Not with a thunderous clap of damnation, but with a whispered question in the back of your skull, with a choice that seems so small at the time, a temptation wrapped in logic, a lie that feeds on a truth you already hold inside. Tsinch corrupts you by giving you exactly what you think you want, and then showing you that what you wanted was only a fraction of what you could have. I was once a man of dust and iron, bound by duty and fear. Now I am something else. Call it monster, call it visionary. The difference hardly matters. I am free in ways I never imagined. Free to pursue knowledge unchained, to change and be change in a galaxy where most beings remain static and afraid. In the end, my tale is just one of countless others. Ambition, curiosity, hope, despair. Tsinch plays them all like instruments. I danced to his tune, believing it was my own melody. Perhaps it was both. Perhaps it always will be. So if you ever find yourself asking dangerous questions, peering too deeply into forbidden data streams, or hearing a little whisper promising you answers in exchange for just a sliver of your soul, well, you know who's listening. And you know where that first step can lead. I took that step willingly, and I don't intend to ever step back. Change is the only constant, and in the embrace of the changer of ways, I have finally become true to myself, hook, line, and sinker. That's how Tsinch corrupts.